Well, hello there. This is season 2 of Books Closed.
This episode is sponsored by Mr. Flash Machine, a revival of production tattoo flash offering a collection of 400 sheets and counting, and Victorious Finds, a one-stop shop Instagram page for antiques, oddities, and collectibles.
Well, well, it's nice to be back. And it's nice to see all of your beautiful, smiling faces, all of you loyal listeners back from season 1, and all of the new faces of people just discovering Books Closed for the first time. Welcome. I'm Andrew Storz, and I will be your fearless leader through yet another season of episodes here where we talk about tattooing. And I sit down each week with a different tattooer, and we really break it down for you. And I'm not talking about what kind of needle do you use? Oh, what's your favorite kind of yellow ink? We don't talk about that sort of thing because that's quite boring. What I find myself more interested in on this show is talking about what it means to be a tattooer. How does it affect our lives? What are our opinions on how the industry has changed or is changing? Things that we look forward to, things that we dread. You know, shop talk, but not the technical stuff that will put you to sleep. I think every trade, every artist, every craftsman of any kind can seek a lot of parallel opinions and thinking in a show like this, so I do hope that you enjoy. I think any discussion of modern tattooing is incomplete unless you get into the topic of tattoo reality TV shows. A lot of people will point to those as being the reason that the magic of tattooing is lost, or that was the pivot point where everything changed and the big boom in popularity came, and you know, that has its positives and negatives with it. But at this point, we've got shows like Ink Master, which has to be the longest-running tattoo reality show that we've seen to date, which is a competition-based show. But way back in 2005, the very first tattoo show at all came out, and it was called Miami Ink. It was the first time that the general public really got to see behind the curtain in a tattoo shop, and not in the sense where you're learning technical things about tattooing, but in the sense where you're really getting to know tattooers who up until that point might have seemed like unattainable people or intimidating bikers or just a different way than we see tattooers now, as it's been so integrated into our mainstream pop culture in various ways. But when Miami Ink came out, you were hearing stories of why people are getting tattooed. So as a general person, you can relate to these customers, and maybe getting tattooed seemed more attainable or seemed less intimidating or less, you know, you weren't as scared to walk into a shop and get tattooed because you see these group of tattoo artists who are joking around and having fun, and they're just doing their job and they're enjoying doing tattoos. And that made the whole thing seem so much more attractive to so many people, from prospective new tattooers to prospective new customers at tattoo shops. So for this first episode, I thought it was about time that I really dive into the topic of these reality shows. And I thought to myself, who better to talk about it with than Ami James, the man himself, the star of Miami Ink, as well as countless other shows since then and a lot of other projects. And I think he's a really interesting guy because he's a great tattooer who doesn't, in my eyes, seem to get the credit for his work that others may. And he's just, in the minds of a lot of people, become the scapegoat for, quote-unquote, why tattooing sucks now. So whether that's your opinion or you're a little more lenient on someone like Ami, like I tend to be, I think this conversation was very interesting. It was interesting to hear Ami talk about his upbringing in tattooing and how he started, who was he was surrounded by, people he's worked with, the shops he's been at, and just some of his new projects since then. So let me take you with me back to San Francisco, where I got to sit down with Ami and talk to him about all this stuff. And our conversation went a little bit like this. We're here at the Bay Area Tattoo Convention in San Francisco, out by the airport.
Yeah, basically a block away from the airport, right?
Yeah. It's funny because as I was preparing to talk to you, I tried to do some research on the guests. And in your case, in contrast
nothing
to other...
pulled up.
Well, a lot pulled up. Unlike most other tattooers, there's not endless hours of footage and things to sift through. Not that I did that, but for any listeners that might not be familiar with your tattooing career, let's just do a little brief overview about how you came up in tattooing.
So, I started tattooing in 1992. I had landed an apprenticeship, which was not very easy to do, from Luz Cabarrus, which owned Tattoos by Lou in Miami Beach, Florida. At the time, that shop was the shop to be in. It had such a great caliber of artist coming through and there. And I was basically scratching out of my house for about 6 months before that. And, you know, like I had this goal that I was going to get myself into that shop. I had known about that shop since I was a kid, because before that shop in Miami Beach, Lou used to have a shop in South Miami. And as a kid, as a punk rock kid, we all used to go and get tattooed there. Although I was such a little kid at the time that Lou would never give me a tattoo. And he was kind of like a one-man show there. You know, he had another tattooer that was working with him, and I think it was Mike Harpool, maybe. And when I was a kid, I'm not sure, but I think it was Mike. You know, I was 15 and trying to get a tattoo, and he would never do it. So finally, I ended up going to get tattooed by some guy that didn't give a shit if you're 14, 15.
There's always someone to do it.
Yeah, and I remember saving $85, you know, washing cars for a few months. And I went and got tattooed by this guy named Fish. I'm pretty sure he's dead today. There was a rumor that he had tattooed this biker guy and put Harley Davidson on his back. So, you know, I grew up knowing about Lou and knowing kind of that he was the guy that if you wanted to learn how to tattoo properly, he was probably going to be the best odds and the best way to get into the business. But it was really hard. So I started tattooing, like I said, out of my house, really scratching, because when I was 20 years old, I gotten arrested. I just got out of the service. And I ended up back in the States after my service. And it was right after the Gulf War. And I ended up getting in a fight and getting arrested. And it was like my third time getting in a fight, I think, in that year. And I sat in downtown for 2 weeks. And nobody wanted to bail me out. My brother was not going to bail me out. So I sat 2 weeks. Finally, they let me out. And my brother was like, "You're not coming back to my house." I was staying with my brother that was 2 years older than me. He's like, "You're a fuck up. You better get your shit together. And it's not in my house." So one of his best friends took me in. And it was just about to be my birthday. And in the morning for my birthday, they knew how much I wanted to start tattooing. And I woke up one morning for my birthday. There was a box on top of the table. And in that box was tattoo equipment. And they didn't know how to fucking get their hands on tattoo equipment or anything. And there was this company called Superior Tattoo Equipment, which...
And I'm sure it was.
Oh, fuck me, man. It was so bad. It was this little aluminum tattoo machine with one tube and five needles. That's what you got with the kit. And it was just a single. and there was no rheostat. There was no power unit. You just basically plugged the machine into the wall, and it had slow, fast, and medium. That's what it had.
That's all you need.
That's all there was available. And I was happier than pigs in shit. When I saw that, I started crying. And I knew that was it, that this is my end, you know, no matter how bad this equipment was, which I didn't even know, that shit looked like a racehorse to me.
Right.
So, you know, before that, I just did needle and thread. So for me, it was like, this is, you know, professional shit.
You've arrived.
I've arrived. And so I called my friend and I did a sleeve on him that same day. I had literally put a dragon from his ear down to his fingers. It was the ugliest fucking earthworm you've ever seen in your life with legs, man. There was no way to describe that thing. It was fucking horrible.
How long did that take?
It took me about 12 hours to do it in 2 days. And then it took me 12 years to fix it. So it was really bad, man. And I think our friendship ceased to exist for a while due to the fact that I just practiced on him. He was my guinea pig.
I think we've all got people like that.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is he ended up going to prison anyway. And in prison, that shit was pretty legit. So when he came out, you know, and I was already pretty established, he only got out maybe 4 years ago, something like that. Did a good long fucking stint in there. And I looked at it and I go, man, this is just as bad as I remember it. He goes, everybody in prison loved it. I'm like, because they don't know shit about tattooing. I was like, you were not in the right place. You should have been like in, you know, in Oakland or something like that to see prisoners with really good fucking tattoos, you know, on the West Coast or something. But I was like, there was not good tattooers in the East Coast as much, you know. So that was my end. My friend Mike Manager that gave me that equipment eventually hung himself in the house maybe 6 months later. Around that time, within about a month when he hung himself, Lou caught me in the middle of the street one day and he goes, I hear that you've been tattooing out of your house on South Beach. And I was like, no, not out of my house. I'm staying in a hotel. So he's like, you know, he was this old school New Yorker. You know, I think he's been around so long, you know, and he was this old school guy that I've looked up to my whole life, you know, just by knowing who he was. And he goes, don't let me catch you tattooing, you know, out of your house. He's like, are you going to get fucked up? And I blew it out. I was like, come on, man. Don't threaten me, you old man. I walked away, and the next fucking week, I got beat up by these two Guidos really bad. And then I was like, man, this guy actually meant it. Like, I'm going to get fucked up. So I started coming to hang out at, trying to hang out at the shop in Tattoos by Lou. At the time, Luis Segato was there. Troy Lane was there. You had Jonathan Shaw that was there constantly working. You had Albert Scambati. You had so many guys. And Eddie Deutsch was constantly coming down. And such good caliber, you know, of tattooers. And I would just sit outside and peek through the window to try to get in. Finally, one day, I tattooed this guy in my my hotel. And he was walking down the street and went to the Deuce across the street. And Lou was sitting there. And he goes, hey, kid, let me see that tattoo on your arm. And he goes, who did that? And he goes, I got that done by Ami, you know. And he goes, you tell that fucking little kid to come by and talk to me. And so he...
And you're like, shit, I'm going to get beat up again.
I thought that I was going to get beat up. And I was like, fuck that. I'm not going over there, you know. Like, I was just, you know, I was 125 pound wet, you know. And I was like, I'm not going to go by there. And he goes, no, I think he wants to talk to you about possibly he liked what you did. Granted, that shit that I did on him was just like a tribal tattoo that, you know, there was like Leo Zulueta, that type of tribal, you know. And I thought I was the hottest shit in the world being able to do that. And he called me up. He's like, I saw that tribal you did. And I was like, yeah, it was pretty good. He goes, nah, it fucking sucked. But he's like, if you stop scrubbing the fucking, you know, start scrubbing the floors here, maybe I'll let you get in here and you might learn something. And I just remember running home and I knew it. I knew that was going to be the biggest change. And it took a while, you know, like I was trying to hang out. And Troy Lane at the time really liked me because he was kind of this kind of army buff into guns and everything. And I just got out of the army and he was always asking me questions about the army and my experience in there. And he was this gun fanatic till today he is. And just as like target practice. And I was a sniper. So he was so intrigued by it. And it was thanks to him that I actually got my apprenticeship because he went to Lou and he was like, that kid's a good kid, man. We should teach that kid how to tattoo. And Lou was not into it. But because of Troy, I think he gave me a break. And then I had to work with him and Luis Segato, which was really a rough crew of guys. You know, Luis was cauliflowered ears, and that was 25 years ago, you know, and he was this Brazilian mammoth of a fucking guy with monkey arms that would just crush your skull with just like a grape. and I was so intimidated, and there were guns inside the shop because it was normal, you know, and it was just a different world, but I was the happiest person on the planet because I knew that that was going to change my life forever.
Do you think that if your brother had let you come back to the house, that any of that stuff would have happened?
You know, I think it was inevitable for me to start tattooing. I don't know if I would have done it the right way, if my brother probably would have been like, you know, just come back and go back to construction, because that's what I was doing. I was a roofer at the time. And that was no fucking job, you know. That was the hardest shit. And it was right after the hurricane. So I was on top of roofs tarring for 4 months or 5 months. And it was miserable. And that's, you know, I literally got out of the army to become a fucking roofer, you know. That was it's pretty sad. Even though I was young, you know, I was only 20 years old.
How long were you in the army for?
It's 3 years, but I joined at 17. Mm-hmm. So, when I got out, you know, I was like, I was clueless and aimless, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I think I would have done whatever it would have taken to get there. And I almost found a way to buy a tattoo machine throughout, you know, it was a punk scene. And everybody was like, this guy tried tattooing out of the house and he had a couple of machines. And I'm like, how do I get him? I'll pay whatever you want. You know, like we didn't, there was no way to get tattoo, you know, equipment. And this guy, like, fucking dragged me along for 2 months while I was living in my brother's house, telling me that he's got this tattoo equipment that he was going to sell me. And I saved up $400 to buy it. And then the guy just fucking bullshitted me and, you know, tried to rip me off of some money, you know. And eventually I was just, you know, I was almost giving up on it. But I knew that that was my, you know, that was my destiny. You know, like, I knew that that was what I was going to do for the rest of my life. I just had to find a way in. You know, if it wasn't for my brother's best friend that took me in, because it was my brother's best friend that took me in and changed my life, you know, I wouldn't have never made it to Lou, you know. So it was just a, you know, coincidence of events that just led me to getting an apprenticeship. And that apprenticeship sucked balls, man. It was horrible. It was like, you know, it would have been all right if I didn't apprentice under these old timers in a way, you know, like it could have been easier, but because these guys were fucking just making my life miserable, and Lou would use his hands to smack you all day and put you down and like, go wash my fucking car, go get me my Reuben sandwich. There was no way you could get peace inside being an apprentice. There's nowhere to escape. To no fucking way. There was nothing. There was just debauchery in that shop. And, I mean, I look back and I'm so glad that I had to experience the last of that era, you know, because it's gone now, you know, and they'll never come back. So,
in some ways it might be for the better.
Yeah. It, in some ways it is. And in some ways it's not. I think in the ways of the foundation and finding foundation in this business and how you do things and how you structure your tattoos and how the longevity, it's kind of like building a structure, you know. Mm-hmm. Good foundation will give you the structure there for 700 years like you see in Europe, while the buildings we build today are brought up in a week. Their foundation, if we left them alone, would not be there since 700 years. So
people can get good so fast now, but they're so definitely fast, missing something.
They're missing that longevity. I'm really happy that I had that foundation and that now I could look at tattoos that I did 20 years ago. And I just saw one yesterday. It was a tattoo I did 22 years ago and it's still fucking there and it's still solid, you know, and it was just thick outline, you know, just the way I was taught. Mm-hmm. And it all made sense because I did try to dabble into, you know, once I fucking thought that I knew it all, I'm like, yeah, fuck, nah, I could do whatever I want. And I realized that there was an era in my career that I didn't know much. And that was predominantly a big, long part of my career, you know. But when I was being told what to do by Lou and by Luis and by Troy, and the biggest influence I think that I had was after a year of apprenticing, Lou made me go apprentice under Mike Wilson. And I didn't appreciate it at the time because Mike was not good to me. as a boss, you know, he was a boss, and I get it, you know. Now I look back, I'm like, I would have even been harder on that fucking kid, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, I learned machinery, and I learned how to fucking make ink, and I learned how to make needles through Mike and Lou, and you know, now I see it, and I understand that foundation was the most important thing in my understanding of tattooing.
Yeah, it's not a bad lineage to have under those guys.
No, you know, it's funny because even the history of those guys didn't exist to me at the time, because I didn't go in, you know, like I never knew Lou's history because I never asked at the time. I was just so gung-ho to be in a tattoo shop and start tattooing and be around all these guys that, you know, like Dave Gibson and all these fucking guys that were such huge things in our world, you know, that were almost unthought of, that you could be in the same room as those guys. And Lou grew up with all those guys, you know, and like, and was from that same line, you know. And later on did I realize that, you know, I was sat there and I would listen to, now it's more important for me to sit there once in a while and listen to Eric Inksmith. And he tells me all these stories about him and Lou and Paul working together and Fayetteville, North Carolina, because Lou had opened a shop in Fayetteville, North Carolina, right in the base, outside of the base. And I was like, so you and Lou and Paul worked in this one shop? He's like, yeah, we used to go out there in 2 months when all the soldiers would come and pour in, and we would fucking kill it, and there was strip bars and fucking, and he would tell me all these stories, and I'm like, this is my where I come from, you know? Like, it's kind of like that. You know, you look back and you go to these fucking websites where you put and they check your DNA and they tell you what you are. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling that I needed to belong to something. I needed to find out, where do I come from in a way, you know, where's my lineage lay, you know, like where did Lou tattoo? Where did he start? You know, these questions didn't interest me as a 20-year-old kid, but are very interesting to me now. And so the information that I started acquiring about where I come from just only came in the last 5 or 7 years that was really important for me to find out, you know. And then I found out that, that you know, Lou learned a lot from Spider Murphy, which I didn't know. And he learned a lot from all these guys that I didn't know that, you know, gave him those first breaks. And he's, you know, he was a New Yorker, a Long Island guy. And not a lot of people wanted to share tattoo information in the 60s, 70s, you know, with these guys that wanted to start tattooing. And then, you know, like listening to Eric Inksmith and other guys that were around with Lou at the time, you know, gave me a lot of information that kind of solidified why I'm still around, because of the foundation, you know. So, you know, most people don't know that, but that's where it comes from for me.
Yeah. I think that's a huge part of having a long career in tattooing, is you really do have to appreciate the old stuff. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it can just be another thing to some people. And it's got to be different now, the way that tattoo history is widely appreciated in a way that it wasn't before. The fact you can go down to a museum exhibit and see a whole room full of tattoo stuff.
I know. I just did. I went there the first day I came to San Francisco. You know, Taki asked me to be on the panel for the Jewish Museum for Lou the Jew, which is really funny because, you know, even Lou used to talk about Lou the Jew. Mm-hmm. And Lou used to joke around with me when I was a kid, you know, and he was like, one fucking day you're going to take over the Lou the Jew because you're the Jew and I'm the Lou. But there was one time a real Lou the Jew. You don't know nothing about him, you know, and he would always bring out this guy Lou the Jew, because but it was L-E-W and he was L-O-U. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I earned the name, you know, like as Tattoos by Jews, because it was Tattoos by Lou's. If you got tattooed by me at the time, it was Tattoos by Jews, and everybody laughed. So I had it on my card, and then my next card was the Hebrew Hammer, because I was really heavy handed, I guess. I had this...
I think everyone is when they start.
You know, I had this thing that I had to pack everything, no matter what it was. It had to be packed.
You had to show your value through pain.
Yeah, and I really, you know, I had this idea because I watched Troy Lane work, you know, and he was so fucking good at the technical aspect of tattooing. Everything he did, even I see it today, is so solid that it looked like it was done 2 years ago. Everything. And that was 25, 30 years ago. And it's still so perfect that the drawing part of it was not as developed as like maybe a Paul Jeffries or an Ed Hardy. But the technical part preceded them all. It was crazy. It really is. Like Troy Lane was one of the most technical sound people I've ever seen tattoo.
And so, which will make old tattoos look the best. I mean, the technical, after 20 or 30 years, I think the technical is more important than the design almost.
For sure, for sure. I remember, like, because I so appreciated what he did to me, I was really wanted to become a good technical tattooer like him. And I wanted to pack everything. And the shittiest part is I was able to pack everything within a year. So solid that tattoos were so fucking bad, but till today, nobody wants to cover them because they're still packed and solid. But they're so ugly, you know, they're so bad. I got to show you, I have a tattoo on my leg that I did with a single needle. Until today, nobody wants to cover it because it's still solid as fuck and it's just the ugliest design you've ever seen. So there's a curse to doing, like, to trying to figure out the technical before you can, like, draw good, you know?
Yeah. So maybe that's the exception to what I just said.
there is only one exception if you're a really shitty artist and you just pack everything perfect. And that's what I did. I used big, bold lines. I was also, I tattooed a year and a half with Frank Lee. And Frank Lee was pushing the envelope on doing this really bold outlines and like really solid and vibrant colors, and he's a really amazing artist. But because of that, everything that I did was super bald and super thick, you know, like everything had to have a line that was like a quarter inch. And it's like, go fucking try to figure out how to cover that up when you realize that the drawing was so bad, it's almost impossible. So I kind of screwed myself with all those things. But
it's a learning process.
Yeah, it still is. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, yeah. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This week we are sponsored by Mr. Flash Machine. And what I love the most about Mr. Flash Machine is the seriously vast catalog of flash sheets that they have available. For sale, they have over 400 sheets of flash that you can buy in sets of 100 each. And if you can't picture what 400 sheets of flash looks like, if you were to stack them up, you could throw a bed sheet over it and sleep on it, practically. It's an amazing collection of flash, and it's not just stuff that you want to tattoo, but it's stuff that your customers actually will get. And it's just easy. You can throw it up on the wall, you can throw it into a book and bring it to a convention, you'll be tattooing from it all weekend if you want. So the bang for your buck factor on Mr. Flash Machine flash is pretty high as far as I'm concerned. So I highly recommend that you all check out at Mr. Flash Machine on Instagram. And from there, you can get a link to their web store where you can order the flash for yourself and keep up to date with them, because it looks as if they're going to be constantly adding to their catalog of flash. They've been a great supporter of the show so far, so please support them at Mr. Flash Machine on Instagram, and don't wait on buying that flash. You will absolutely not regret it. We're also sponsored by Victorious Finds, which is an Instagram-based one-stop shop for antiques, oddities, and collectibles. So, Victorious Finds is a page that I've followed for years now, and they curate and handpick items that are all through the lens of someone who appreciates classic tattoo-type imagery. So, if you're into tat stuff like I am, you can find a lot of cool stuff for your shop, for your home, for wherever you're trying to decorate or make it look like you are cultured, or, you know, you just want to look cool. You want to have cool stuff. So Victorious Finds is a great place and an easy way where you don't have to scour flea markets, and you can just have all the cool tat stuff curated for you. They also now offer consignment for those of you who are wanting to part with old treasures to make room for new trinkets. The page has been operating for 5 years, and the prices shown on their page all include shipping in the contiguous United States. All you have to do when you see something that you want is comment "sold" to buy, and then they will walk you through the purchasing process and make sure that you get your cool-ass items. A few years ago, as I was preparing to film this, I just remembered that I bought This deer skull. Look at this. Sorry if you're just listening, but I'm holding a deer skull right here. Look how cool I look. So I was just sitting on Instagram and I see a deer skull. And I commented, sold. And then now I'm a cowboy. It's as easy as that. And it's that you can find all sorts of stuff. Skulls and old paintings and old wood things. There's just a lot of stuff on there. And I'll include some photos of it. But you want to check them out on Instagram. At Victorious Finds is how you do it. It's all right there. You don't need to link to anything. And you too can be surrounded by cool-ass stuff. So help support Books Closed by supporting our sponsors, Mr. Flash Machine and Victorious Finds. Thank you. So the root of you being able to pack such solid tattoos from an early time in your career, did you have a lot of confidence from the start? Because to me, that indicates just tattooing confidently.
Wow, that's a good question. I think, you know, when you start tattooing, you really always think that you're better than you are, you know.
Until something bad happens and then it knocks you down a few pegs.
Yeah, and then it also takes somebody to put you down and put you in your place. And I think that's kind of a good thing, you know. So, I think confidence when you're starting to tattoo is important because then you'll push yourself. You know, I have guys that work with me and they don't have any confidence in themselves, on their drawing capability or what they are going to take on sometimes. And I know that they're capable because I'm looking at it from the outside, but they're not sure of themselves. And I think that's a bad thing because then you're not pushing yourself to try bigger and greater things.
Why do you think that is?
That they, you know, confidence? I think these days it's much harder because, man, obviously, you know, you're aware of the competition. I don't need to tell you how hard it is to stay significant or relevant these days.
People are so preoccupied with that because we're holding a relevance machine in our hand all the time.
We have to, in a way, because it's a survival mode we're in already. We're not in a position anymore where, unlike 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I knew that all I had to do was be able to do great flash, and I got a great living in front of me. And it doesn't matter where I go because it was only 3 tattoo shops in every fucking city. Not 5,000. Mm-hmm. So we had this comfort zone where we just had to do good, clean tattoos. That's all I've ever wanted to do. That was really what I wanted to get, good, clean tattoos. And you realize that good, clean tattoos, that's not even something you should be doing anymore. If that's what you're doing, just go find another fucking job because you these days need to do a lot more than good, clean tattoos to keep yourself relevant in this business. I look at the art that's coming out these days, and that shit would have looked like Chinese to me back then. I would have been, that's not a tattoo. That shit's airbrushed on that skin. There's no way nobody's capable of doing that. It would have been like looking into a future, but I would have said that's 500 years ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone showed me a picture of this shit, I would have been like, that's time travel shit, what you just showed me. I was like, there's no way that was done by hand. But
what do you think about all these new styles? And maybe particularly the ones that a lot of people can be critical of the way they're going to age.
Like I said, you know, and you basically asked me and answered pretty much everything because we both know where this question is going to lead us to. But I have to say that I'm super blown away by the amount of talent that we're seeing today. With the lack of foundation, I also see that there is no life to it. And that if you want to start tattooing in this business and you want to keep redoing all your work every 10 fucking years, you better reassess what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine just accepting that fact. Well, we'll redo it in a decade.
Yeah, but that's very in the norm now. Like, tattoos should be refreshed every few years. Fuck no, tattoos shouldn't be refreshed every few years. Maybe if you want to get your tattoo refreshed 25 years later, that I get.
Yeah.
But every 10 years to go over your tattoo, especially when you paid a fuckload of money on it, that's like property tax and shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's like buying a fucking house in San Francisco where the property tax is just going to fuck you every year. So I just don't get it. I just don't get why I would want to do that. It's like buying paint for your house that you're going to have to repaint every 6 months. That makes no sense to me.
It's because they're cute.
they're really cute and fluffy.
Yeah. They look wet.
They look wet. It's funny, but that's what it is. And everybody's hosing them down. I'm just going to start putting baby oil on my tattoos.
Yeah.
Just squirting it slow motion with baby oil while I'm taking my photos.
Yeah, I mean, any tattoo can look wet.
Every tattoo just looks wet these days. It's, yeah, man, you know, it's intimidating in a way. But in a way, we can kind of comfort ourselves that we have this foundation that they're lacking, and that's keeping us still relevant in a way. But you realize that more and more our consumers are less knowledgeable and they don't care.
But they think they're more knowledgeable in a lot of cases too, which can be dangerous.
Of course. I mean, but that's the millennials. They think they know everything no matter what the fuck you do, you know? These guys have invented the spoon. And they're all made out of silver for them, you know, and it's just a fucked up world we're living in. I think because we're in the fucking tattoo industry, we actually look at it within the tattoo industry and see what the millennials are affecting, how they're affecting our tattoo industry and our world. But it's in everywhere. It's in everything. You know, it's how we shop, how we perceive things, how we do everything through our daily routines. Is all done with instant gratification, and that instant gratification is also infiltrated our world. You know, fuck that. I just want a tattoo for that. Yeah, I'm probably going to get it removed anyway one day. You know, like that's the shit that I hear all the time.
Yeah, I can't believe when people say that.
Well, you can get it removed.
Yeah, it's not permanent. like you're good luck with that.
Fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
So
I just say you have cash, right?
Yes. So it's, I mean, you know. It's inevitable, bro. This whole change is inevitable. You know, we talked last night. It was me and Henning and Mickey and a few of my friends that sat there, and we all just kind of talked about what change is coming. And I see the change because I'm so involved in what's happening in the social media side because of my company, you know, and how we're doing so much research to see where we're heading. And since all the information now is given to us digitally, you know, we can actually see how this train is flying and where it's going and where the tracks in front of it are laid down. We can also dictate some of it, you know, because we have such a big community now that we can kind of maneuver it, but you can't stop it. We can maybe say, yo, hang the track to the fucking right. And we can go right, but the guy is like, you need to stop the train. There's no stopping the fucking train. We can help maneuver it a bit, but there's no stopping it. And
the company you're talking about is Tattoo Do.
Yeah, Tattoo Do.
So what exactly is Tattoo Do?
So Tattoo Do is basically the biggest, we're the biggest community that's online when it comes to tattoos, anything that has to do with tattoos, but it's directed 100% at tattooing, nothing else. All the information, all the artists in the world, all the shops, all the fucking trends and all the shit that's involved in this world, whether good or bad, is given to you. We try to cater to the best artist in whatever they do to have clients be able to find them and not have scratchers on the platform where people, you know, trying to educate the people on how to find good art. You can't, you know, I realize that. If you walk in for a watercolor tattoo to a shop, and every fucking shop now, they'll be like, yeah, no problem. Steve, you're up. Because Steve does watercolor tattoos. Yeah,
he puts his beret on.
He puts his fucking bandana on his head, you know, and his tie-dye t-shirt, and he's ready to fucking rock. Yeah. And you saying, fuck that, we don't do that shit, is financial suicide. There is no more no's. Used to have a lot of no's. I used to say, no, you're not getting your hand tattooed or your neck tattooed in my shop. I can't say that anymore because that shop, that client went to someplace else across the street and got it done and never came back for his next sleeve, even though he started with his neck. So you start realizing that you have to just move with the times. Now it's acceptable to tattoo necks and hands.
And
maybe
faces.
We still do, we don't do faces.
Yeah.
unless you're fully tattooed and you're a tattooer and that's what you choose to do with your face, we will never do a face tattoo for anybody in the shop unless you're a fucking established tattooer. But hands and necks is in the norm now. If you would have asked me, you know, I remember I got tattooed my neck 24 years ago, I think. It was Joe Vegas did my tattoo in my neck. And Lou wanted to kill me. And he was an old timer. And he wanted to kill me. And he was like my dad. And we had a relationship of a son and father, you know. And he was so angry at me. He goes, that's not what I fucking taught you. That's not how I brought you up. He's like, you don't do that. You know, you're supposed to be able to go anywhere in the world and never be looked at as anything but just this person that can maneuver himself through hards, through thick and thin, through come rain or come shine. You're that guy that's going to survive like a cockroach. So always make sure that you can always cover up or take it off. But always be that vigilante guy that can go anywhere. And, you know, that made sense to me a lot more later than it did. And for years I was saying, I'm going to take this tattoo off my neck after the third time I got deported. You know, and I've been deported. And I realized what he was talking about. I remember just going, you know, like I was not American, so I would try to come back to the country and I would just get blacklisted. No, can't. You know, just because of a tattoo on my neck, to them, I was a criminal. I was a convict or a fucking gang member. Today, it just means that you work at fucking Starbucks. You know, right. It's such a different fucking thing.
Yeah, you go through
thing.
Customs and they're like, cool tats, bro.
Yeah, man. Hey, I saw you. You work at Starbucks, right? Get my fucking Frappuccino from you all the time. Love the neck tattoo.
Hey, man, when's pumpkin spice coming back? Because I'm thirsty. Yeah,
it's the fucking truth, you know, but you have to keep up with the times and how they're changing. You got to do it all. You know, girls come in, they want no outlines. Doesn't mean I'm going to do it, but I got a guy that's going to fucking do it because that's what you want. The most important thing is that we still give him the information. You know that's not going to work for you. You know that in 2 years that thing will be gone, but you still want to get it? No problem. But the information was given to you. That's what we created Tattoo Do, is to allow the information to be out there. We started as a company that was crowdsourcing for tattooers to be able to sell their designs to people all over the world. So kind of like an online gallery where people can buy custom designs from guys that are not as busy as they want to be, but still sit and draw all day. And that changed into a media company. We became the biggest media company with a reach of 2 billion a month. You know, we have a following of like 35 million people. We have an app that's almost got 5 million people. There's 500,000 tattooers on the app. And we realized that there's so much good shit that we can actually do by just not looking at it. It's me, 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 but it's all the artists around the world and how you allow these artists to expose themselves and how people that are interested in tattoo content can look, and they don't have to fucking look through Instagram or Facebook to try to, or Google, which is even worse, or Pinterest, which is fucking beyond worse.
Yeah, just totally
to
uncredited.
Figure out what tattoos should be. And I can say that it's growing faster than ever now, as this industry's grown faster than ever. And we wanted to do it, you know, for tattooers by tattooers and for the consumers by tattooers, so they get it. It's kind of like that old saying when Lou used to tell me all the time. He's like, never let your customers tell you how good you are because you suck. You know? And I grew up with that constantly in my ear, like, never let your fucking clients tell you how good you are because they don't know shit. And now it makes more sense than ever because your customers try to tell you what to do, not just how good you are. It's one thing that they tell you, this is the best tattoo I've ever seen, as you're finished with their tattoo. And when me and you look and you're like, dude, you just got a pile of shit from Pinterest. But they think it's the greatest. And they go on their fucking social media and like, got this tattoo by one of the greatest tattoo artists in the world. You know, whatever it is. And you look at the tattoo and you're like, you just got a fucking dandelion bursting into fucking birds. Mm-hmm. And you just gave this guy credit like if he was fucking Picasso. And it's so far from the truth. So we wanted to break that. And we wanted to give the people the right information. And yes, you can't say that, you know, you shouldn't be getting what you want to get. but you should at least know that if you're going to get it, it might not last. And that information is something that you have to weigh out.
I always think it's funny when people come into the shop and they look at the flash on the walls and they say, I would never get that because everyone has that. And then they take their phone and they say, I want this. And it's like page one of Google image search for sunflower or whatever.
Dude.
And it's like the number of people that have this like 1998 random guy that made like 12 sets of the flash. Nobody has that tattoo. Nobody.
Yeah. Nobody. You know, it's funny because I made this skit about this, and the skit went something like this. I drew it out, and I was going to turn it into a cartoon, which I think I'm still going to do, and I'm just trying to work around it and trying to make it happen. And I was trying to find animators to all this shit, but the skit was really about what you just said, which was really funny. I had this in my mind from working in shops like that for so many years and what people think is original, what's not. And there was a chick that walked into the tattoo shop. She's like, oh my God, I just want to get something like super original. And like, I don't want anything from the walls. And I just want like this. And I'm like, Heather, give me the phone, you know? And she pulls out her phone and she's like, you know, like I want this, but instead of like the dandelion, I want this. And I want like the letters and Roman numeral letters. And I want to get it on my ribs. And you're like, all right, no problem. And you go in the back and you're like, Jose, pull up number 5 out of the drawer.
You know? Yeah.
And
we've got the board in the back of the shop with like the greatest hits.
Fuck,
the little
for
mountains,
sure, man.
The waves, and it's just like
the infinity signs with the fucking feather and everything. We have them. And I think every old school tattoo fucking shop had the sheet of shame. And we all have it. We all fucking call it the same. And what do they call it in my shop? Poofty little poofters or some shit like that. Poopsie tattoos. There was like a poopsie tattoo flash. And you saw what you would literally make $1 million out of that fucking flash.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all drive those designs to work every day.
100%. And I mean, it's kind of in a norm in a way, but at least back then, people walked into the shop and picked it off the wall. They knew that somebody probably has this tattoo.
I can respect that more at this point than 100%. Someone trying to
find
you.
I did Yosemite Sam a fucking million times in the 90s. The Tasmanian Devil. I did him maybe 900 of them in the 90s. Maybe 900. Tribal armbands. 6,000, 7,000 tribal armbands in my life, probably at least. And then you realize that it wasn't that difference, but the difference was we didn't think that it was original. They didn't fucking come in with this perception that they're the only ones walking out with a tribal armband. They wanted it because every fucking person at the bar in Daytona had a tribal armband that looked like Anthony Kiedis. You know, that was just normal. Or the fucking elephant band. And also that shit was pre-internet, you know, people... These fuckers can't even fathom the thought of tattooing without Google. Mm-hmm. There's no way. They look at that shit and they just, there's no way.
And they see an image and that, like they need to have that image. But all they did was see it.
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating part to me because it's like, well, I could show you something and then all you did was see that. Maybe you'll like that. But it's like they get their heart set so much on something that's...
So quick.
Yeah.
So it's such a different world, you know, like... I think anybody that tattooed pre-internet looks at it completely different. And I know from the stories that I got lucky to hear about, you know, tattooers that tattooed not just pre-internet, pre-fucking autoclave, pre-stencils, you know, acetates, which I had drawers of, you know, of acetates. And it's just like, how do you even explain that to these kids? Making needles is... Chinese to them. There's not one fucking kid that knows how to make a needle or how to make ink or how to fucking build a machine.
Do you think it's worth it to learn that stuff these days?
I don't know. You know, I think it's important to know if you're using coil machines, how to retune your machine, because if not, what do you do when the shit doesn't work? I gotta send this back. I'm like, what do you mean? I remember like having a kit in my fucking drawer with spare springs, contact screws, fucking going outside, scraping my contact screw in a fucking on the pavement outside and sharpening it up, going back in there, dialing it in, looking at my spring that was too rusted and is about to give, or in the middle of the fucking tattoo, the spring would be just like, pop and will fly off and you're like, oh shit. And you would have to make a new spring. Mm-hmm. And these guys are incapable of it. They just wouldn't know. But considering they're all using these fucking nose trimmers these days, and don't get me wrong.
They don't want to chip the powder coating on the sidewalk.
Yeah. You know, like, don't get me wrong. Like, now I use rotary machines because my hands don't work as well. I can't hold a normal machine anymore. A coil machine for me, which is in the norm. I can't hold the weight because my hands are so banged up. So I have to use these super lights. I can use a Dan Cuban that's mimicking a coil machine, but just does the job right.
Yeah, he does a great, like, in between.
I know, and it's amazing. It really is the to-go-to machine for me. But I also use, like, cartridges now, which is, you know, like, it took me a while to wrap my head around this whole big change, but I embraced it at the end because it made my life easier to fucking get my job done. You know, traveling now with just a bunch of cartridges rather than 16 fucking metal tubes. And, you know, like, I remember having in the middle of the convention, having to sterilize my tubes back in Detroit or all the early 90s convention that I would go to. And I'd be like, you're scrubbing tubes in a convention, for fuck's sake.
You're like, I got six more lined up. I got to clean this thing.
Yeah, and you're like, dude, just wait up, man. It's almost done. It's almost done, man. I'm almost sterilized. Man, come, hey, how's that autoclave doing? You know, like, people can't even fucking think about that, yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, and these days, it's just like cartridges. And, hey, man, you got a 14 shader, like a hollow? Yeah, like, I learned how to tattoo with 6 flats, where if you went sideways, that shit was like a...
Guts fall out.
Guts fall out, you know? But, like... Lou was like, it's all you fucking use is 6 flats. That's what Paul Rogers used. You know, and I was like, but I'm cutting people up. He's like, stop going sideways, kid. You know, yeah, I'm sorry. And then Magnums. I remember when Magnums came out. I don't even know why they named it Magnum. Was it a Magnum PI? You know, like, was it because the mustache was really fucking hot right then? And he drove a Ferrari? Is that what it was? I had no idea. I was like, but I remember, and then I remember this needle called Grinders, which was a stack of 3. It was like trying to make a Tabori needle to pack tribal. You know, and I was like, but it literally, there was no space between them because you weren't separating them or anything. They were just like stuck together, like in a row, all the same height. And you're just butchering people with it, scar tissue. Tattoos, you know?
So it's basically like the edge of a knife at that point.
Basically braille. You're putting some braille on somebody. But it was so black. I'm like, not for long, homie. But, you know, times have changed and you just have to kind of, you embrace the good shit that made it easy for us to get the job done. You know, things are, you can hate on rotaries, but now 80% of us using rotaries. Some of us are going to say true to the coil, you know? But
then you'll have to retire eventually because your hands are all fucked up.
And the noise, you know, I'm half deaf in my right ear. And I had some damage from the service, my right ear. But it definitely got worse over the years from having a machine buzzing on my right ear. Maybe it would have been better if I was left-handed, but I had a grenade explode a foot away from my head. And fucked up my ears forever, you know, but the right ear and having to hold a tattoo machine, you don't really realize that when you're trying to see what you're doing, you're also this close to the machine. So it's like the noise for 25 years just going is probably
not
good.
For your eardrum.
It's a slow death, and the frequency some machines run on.
Aluminum frame machines. I've had a couple I had to just ditch because my ears would ring after outlining a piece with it.
It's really hard, you know, so... I just look at it and I'm like, now my machines don't sound like anything sometimes. And it's so calming and it's relaxing. But you can also hear the prickling of the skin if you don't have your fucking, you know, your music blasting in the background. You can actually hear how you're hitting the skin. And you can there's a little bit more feel to it. I still would love to use coils for some things that I want that old school peppery fucking, you know, whip shade, but I can't hold it. I would literally drop it in the middle of the, you know, Tim was going to make me, and he's like, I'm going to make you a super light machine. I'm like, well, there's a problem with light machines when they're coils. Vibration, you want to make them extra light. What are you making them out of? If it's aluminum, it's super loud. You know, if you're drilling too many fucking holes, it flexes. You know, so all the things that these tattooers know nothing about, we kind of, because we had that little bit of information, we realized that those things will always kind of, it's like a car with a lot of weight. And what happens when you strip a car, there's not a lot of weight. Maybe it gets thrown around a lot easier. So all sorts of things that affect it. But, you know, I'm happy I found my, you know, my machines that work for me. You know, there's certain machines that I just now it's my to go to. Cuban for lining anything, big bold lines, which is mostly what I do anyway. And then, you know, I got a few fucking shaders and coloring machines that are just awesome, and cartridges, and I fly through them, and I put six cartridges on the fucking table, and I can fill in and not cut corners and go in. And you know, so many things that are so easy now. Like, I'll do background now, but at the end, I'll go back with my fucking round shader because it's a cartridge and go fill in all the corners so I don't waste time trying to get there with a 17 Magnum or 25 Magnum, whatever I'm pushing. You know, so, yeah, it's definitely a big change. You can see why these guys are tattooing so well these days, because you had to learn how to hold that machine that weighed fucking as much as a dumbbell, and today the machine's a nose trimmer, you know, a vibrator for that. It's like a little fucking rabbit, a pocket rocket or something like that with a fucking needle at the end.
So, yeah, people are definitely set up for success now more than ever.
For sure. I mean, how hard is it to grab a pen and shade with it? It's not like that weight. Remember, like, we had to sit there and put fucking pencils and you know, put them on the machine, and that pencil all of a sudden weighed 45 fucking pounds. Mm-hmm. And you had to do perfect circles for 2 days with a pencil with a dumbbell in the back of it. These days, they don't. Right. They just order a pen. And there's companies that are selling pens to anybody and anything. Just, yeah, sure.
In 16 assorted colors.
I know. It's so sad.
One of my favorite old tattoo stories that I've heard at Hobo's in New Hampshire, where I work, we worked with Tattoo George, who learned from Bob Shaw.
Yeah.
And he's full of stories, you know, like in this conversation so far, I can almost see Lou sitting on your shoulder, still whispering these things into your ears that, that really seem to still shape the way you look at things. But when George, when they first got stencils as we know them now, he felt the freedom. I can do anything. I can line over here. I can line over there.
Yeah.
And he did a Yosemite Sam on a guy, and he's like, I'm going to do the belt buckle first, and then I'm going to do a boot, and then I'll do half the mustache. And then the guy passed out and left and never came back to get it finished.
The belt, the fucking, a boot and a mustache.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a fucking great tattoo, actually. That's a tattoo with a story.
Right. Right. And it makes you wonder if he ever did anything with it, or if he just wears it like a,
I mean, people don't get how messy that was. You know, like, I watched Lou put on acetates, you know, and powder all over the fucking place, you know. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the messiest shit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I have one of Shaw's old fucking acetates in one of my drawers. And I look at it once in a while. I'll just scroll through all the shit that I have, and I look at it, and I'm like, fuck, man. Like, there was such a cool thing about having to go through all this process to get this design on that has been done a billion times with this fucking acetate. So much history in this piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't even imagine having to use it today, because shit, you know, these days you got these, I don't know, I don't own one, but I see these guys that are doing all this photorealism, you know, airbrushing tattoos, and the stencil is already a finished product. You know, like it's like grainy where it needs to be grainy. It's super dark purple where it's super dark.
Even the stencil's wet.
the stencil's already. I'm like, that's a beautiful town. I'm like, that's just a stencil. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Step aside, chump. Yeah. Class is in session.
Fucking A, man. And now I get it. I guess with so many, because you don't have to think anymore. I mean, that's kind of in the norm now. You put your iPad next to your tattoo. You're not creative anymore because Photoshop did that shit for you. That was the creative part. I can't believe you put that church with that skull together.
Yeah, it's like being a collage artist.
Yeah, that's basically what it is, making collages. But you're not seven any longer. This is collages for the fucking grown-ups.
You're tatting them.
You're pulling all sorts of information, putting it together. It's genius. You know, and then you get to airbrush it.
And they all have like galaxies behind it.
I love the galaxy work.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I'm there. And then if you ask...
I hold my breath when I look at them because I don't know how the atmosphere is going to affect me.
And then you ask, they're like, what is it? And they just all say, you wouldn't understand.
Here, hold my pen. I got to...
Yeah, like, right. I wouldn't. I guess. I don't understand.
But is this us just unwilling to see the value in something new? I mean, I know we see a value in it, but...
I say like this. Unfortunately, there has always been in the history of what art is. And we at one point did take this world where we were copying designs off a wall. We were copying designs off a wall. I wasn't trying to reinvent the fucking wheel. I try to do, you know, a Sailor Jerry Flash, which I've probably done every fucking single one in the world. Again and again and again and again and again. The first 5 or 10 years of my tattooing, that's what I wanted to do. But there was a value behind it that we looked at, a historical value, the same way Polynesians have been doing the same fucking tattoo. And again and again and again. Eventually, we graduate from that to being able to draw our own ideas of what traditional flash is with the foundation that we have acquired by tracing and copying for so long. And once you've figured that that's your foundation, go ahead and start mastering your own shit. Draw your eagle this way. Put the wing the other way instead of this way and flip it over. And put the head facing up instead of down, and da-da-da-da-da, and put some dots at the end of the tail, and shit, that we felt the freedom to start creating because we had the foundation. There's now this whole thing where there's no more originality to it, because the originality is by just literally copying, Xerox copying something. When you're taking a church in Photoshop, and you're dragging it in, and you're... Now you're putting your fucking owl into it, and the eyeball now has a reflection, but the reflection is of a beach scene that you grabbed from another fucking picture and you shoved it in there. And you're just basically pasting, like we said. That would not fly in any art school in the history of humanity, because you couldn't walk into an art school and say, I could copy the Mona Lisa. That wasn't what we wanted to see in art. We wanted to see something that was created. That's what art is. It's creating something out of nothing. You know, creating something out of nothing is what. Well, yeah, so of course you went to art school and you learned how to draw a fucking vase, because that's what you do. Or the flowers or the cup or whatever it is. And that's how we start. But eventually they're going to say, now we're going to take this away. Now you found your foundation. Now you have to move forward, and you're going to start having to create. If you have any creative spirit within your soul, that's what art is. We don't have that anymore. Now it's just Xerox copying. And because the average consumer doesn't know shit about art or the history of art or what art is, and then it's self-explanatory what art is, to create something out of nothing with a creative force that is within you. That's non-existent. Now it's a digital thing that's creating it for you. And that's what's going to happen. And so that's the sad part. And that will never be the same thing that we were doing. We actually sat and painted times because we didn't have internet. So you had to create. You were forced to create. And some of those guys are still around, obviously. And some of these newcomers are coming out. They're amazing artists. But 80% are just Xerox copiers. And they're really good at it. And that's not a, that's a sort of a talent, but it's not an artistic talent. You know, it's not a creative talent, that's for sure. It's just a talent to be able to copy something. And then you see guys that are doing these amazing simple tattoos that blow me away by just the idea. How did you come up with that fucking awesome idea? And I see guys all the time, you know, like I see these young guys. You know, I looked at the shit, you know, Greg Letron, like to say, I just saw this painting that he did. And it's just because we were looking through this morning. And the guy's been tattooing, I think, only 8 years or less than 10 years, you know, and I'm blown away by this creative ability to do things. And I just used him as a as an example, just because we literally just talked about it.
He's a great example of someone who has like such a maturity in his work for the time he's been tattooing.
For the time he's been tattooing.
Or for anyone.
But also the fact that he didn't need to fucking sauce it up with Hollandaise sauce to make it seem like it was something fancy and airbrushy and bullshit, fucking all the additives. That the core of it was as sweet as wine. And it was simple. You didn't need to do nothing but fucking put some grapes in there, you know? So there are those guys. And it's, that's, he's just one out of 1,000 guys that are capable of doing that, that are more relevant to me than all these guys that are just Xerox copying things, because that's less creative. And some of those guys that can Xerox copy do have a creative side to it, but because the business demands them to just keep copying shit, because people keep coming in, like they come to our shop with a fucking picture on their phone, they want this. And he's going to say, fuck, well, you know, I'm capable of doing it and I need the money. And that's my living. So there are those guys, and there's those guys that just depend on, and that's all there is. And they think of themselves as artists, but you're not an artist. You're a Xerox machine. Some of them are capable of creating art. And those I'll take my hat off. So,
I mean, in some ways, you can kind of draw a parallel, like you described doing a ton of Sailor Jerry Flash for the first 10 years of your career. That's just Xeroxing, the same way that maybe some of these kids are younger, but that this is their foundation.
Yeah. There is, you know, for sure you can argue with that. There's a difference, though, because one had a foundation. It was done that reason because they knew that 80 years from now, you're still going to be saggy and fucking bald and in a fucking wheelchair, but you know that shit was a fucking mermaid. That's the foundation difference. Rather than, you know, airbrushing some carnival fucking shirt on you like you went on a spring break and, you know, and color portraits really have a hard time giving that world. Besides the fact that I'm blown away that they can do it. Technically, I'm blown away. The way it looks, I'm blown away. The technique is amazing that they can do it. But did you know that brown fades faster than any other color? And since a portrait of a face is mostly browns and light browns and whites that don't last, what are you going to do? If your nose is sticking out of your fucking face because there's a tip that's white, that's the only reason you know it's actually not concave, then actually protruding out of your face because it's white and the white is gone. What is it going to look like? Now, you know, it's not going to last. So why do it?
I always think that people that are that skilled to do color portraits at that high level, if they just did them all black and gray, they'd be rolling.
They'd be rolling. But then their competition is huge, too.
I mean, like the top color portrait people. If they just did it black and gray, they would have such a body of work that lasts for so long. And it, to me, it seems 100%. Like a missed opportunity.
100%. You know, I became friends with Nico Hurtado not long ago, which was really cool because I was an advocate against those type of tattoos for longevity reasons, nothing else. Not because I can't appreciate the skill level that it takes, because he's got a fucking gigantic skill level that nobody can take away from him. And we talked about it, you know, and I was pretty blown away that he was willing to talk about it and to know that this is going to be a thing that you're going to have to probably revisit at one point or another, depending on where you live and what kind of abuse you're doing to your skin, how fast you're going to have to be there. I'm sure if you live in fucking Alaska, that shit will probably last you 30 years in, on your thigh. But what is it going to do in Miami? That's a fucking sunburn away from a disaster.
Yeah, doesn't stand a chance.
But the understanding that he's capable of doing it, and he's actually a really good artist, period. Tell him to fucking paint you a canvas. He's actually a good artist. Would it probably be a better longevity move for him to do it in black and gray? Absolutely. But then he would be competing with 600 guys that are doing exactly what he's been doing and went to black and gray, but he is one of the few that could do that good. You know, black and gray, he could do it because his black and gray is amazing. You look at his black and gray portraits, you're like, fuck, that's badass. But I'll flip the page and see a color portrait, I'm like, oh, you know, like it just hurts me to see it because no matter how badass it is, I know the aging process of it. So it's not that he's not capable of doing it. It's just it's a different ball game, and he knows that that's his niche and that's how he's got to make a living. And we all have kids. We all have families. We all got to support our families, and we all got to do what it takes us to differentiate us a little bit from the rest to give us a livelihood, you know? And we all have that. It's like, you know, there's guys like Greg Christian, you know, that has his own style. It's not that he's the only guy doing bald, traditional, funky colors. It's that Inksmith and Rogers feel, whatever it is. But he's got his own expressive style within what he does that he's the tattooer of all tattooers. And he's got this niche because people love that stuff that he does. And I tattooed with Greg for, fuck, over 20 years, you know. We started tattooing in Tattoos by Lou. I mean, I was there, but he came down in the early 90s. And we spent 3 years together, or 4 years in the tattoo shop. And at the time, his black and gray was really fucking good. And his hands were capable of doing fine line. And later on, you become more dependent on solid lines that you know are not shaky. And you start molding yourself into what's, but also his creative side is fucking awesome. And that's what gave him so... I think that's the most important thing is that we all try to peek at what we can do best and what we can deliver, you know? And some guys will get it and some guys will not and will suffer the consequences, you know? And that's a sad part.
You have just been listening to the first half of my interview with Ami James. But don't fret, part two is available right now, where we talk a lot more about Ami's experience with Miami Ink and the reaction that he got from the tattoo community.
Do I take that and say I'm responsible for it? No, it was inevitable. I have to say it again and again. If it wasn't me, it was going to be somebody else.
It's probably already downloaded on your phone or tablet, I would imagine. But before we go on to that next episode, I want to remind you that we are sponsored this week by Mr. Flash Machine and Victorious Finds. So please, please check out the show notes. Check out the links to both of those great supporters of this show. That's it. I'll see you on part two.